It's Friday, April 17th, 2009, and you're listening to episode 143 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 56 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
My name is Pat.
And my name is Chris.
Chris.
Dan.
I'm going to give you a quick moment to do a shout out to some folks that are kind of helping us out.
Blah, blah, blah. Chris's friends.
At which point, we're going to play a little game.
I like games.
Yes, a quick shout out. By the time this episode drops, Worldwide D&D Day will have been a couple of weeks ago. And
March 22nd, if memory serves.
Yes, and I was unable to actively attend, although I had intended to. I was quite ill that day. However, Mike at my friendly local gaming store, which is known as The Core, was nice enough to let me stop by and drop off some Fear the Boot business cards, which was very cool of him, and so I spread them out amongst the loaded tables that were there with people playing games and whatnot. And just to plug the store just a little bit, it's a very cool gaming store and does a lot of things right in regards to gaming. They have gaming activities going on almost every night, a very active email newsletter that gets circulated. And probably one of the coolest things they do is during the summer and fall months, they will bring back old movies and put them on the big screen at reduced prices, no less. Last summer, I was able to go and see Aliens up on the big screen, which is something I hadn't done since the movie came out. And they've done that with a number of different movies. They had Gremlins. They had Back to the Future.
Now, Chris, let me ask you this about that movie thing, because
yes,
there's a local gaming store around here that used to do it. I don't think they do it anymore. They would do the same thing. They would rent out a movie theater, late night movies of something classic like Goonies or whatever.
Sure.
And they would ruin it. I mean, not ruin the actual movie, but it's like you would go there at the start time, say 10 o'clock, and then they would do these silly contests and ask all these trivia questions, and the only answer that they got from the crowd is shut up and play the movie. And you know, I mean, you want to do a little bit of promotion. You want to have somebody up there say, hey, we're putting this on, here's our locations, and come down, mention the movie night, get 10% off or whatever, or just do something light and quick. But they just went on and on and on, and actually it caused Dawn and I not to go back to see any of these because it was so annoying.
Yeah, and the couple times that I did go, you know, they did do that in the sense they might say something beforehand, or they might do, yeah, maybe like a quick trivia thing, but
that's good.
Yeah, and really what they did was all of their promotional stuff that helped to plug the store, they kept all that stuff out in the lobby.
Oh,
so
that's cool.
You know, so yeah, you could go there, you could go through and you could get the pamphlets or whatever, or you could register if they had a contest, yeah, or whatever. They know the appropriate space to do that.
Yeah. See, I totally don't mind getting into that stuff. I'd like to read catalogs and pamphlets and stuff. I'm weird like that, but I want to do it on my own time. So
you're there to see the movie, let's see the movie.
Exactly.
The Core, it's a good example of a gaming store that really is active and really tries to cultivate the local community, which is good.
Okay, so they've got a website, right?
They do, and I'll get it for you for the show notes.
And they are in Cedar Falls, Iowa?
Cedar Falls, Iowa, which is, you know, right on top. Cedar Falls basically humps Waterloo as far as the geographic. Yeah, we're right on top.
That's why
of
you moved
other
there, huh?
That's why I'm happy here.
Okay. So Cedar Falls, Iowa. So it's basically you and the guys who own the Core shop or whatever.
And then some farmers. Yeah. That's about
farmers.
It.
Wow. Okay. I'm so then sorry.
We will put up a link to that shop in the show notes. So if you are in that area looking for a gaming store, be sure to stop by and check this place out. All right. Let's play a little game now. We have talked on this show many times about TV shows, movies, novels that we think should be adapted into RPGs. Okay.
Oh my God, Dune. They've tried it and failed so many times.
All right, should be adapted properly. You get the idea. And some of these things have been adapted poorly. Some of them have been adapted wonderfully. Some of them have been adapted, but only unofficially. And then there's things like Ultima that have just been adapted by me. But I want to play a game from the reverse angle, which is I want to start throwing out things that we think among us, and maybe we're not going to agree on this, would not make a good RPG. And what I want to start off with is when we were kind of prepping and testing this topic out for the mics we're on, because we try to do that just to make sure a topic's going to go somewhere. We're not just going to bring it up and sit on it. I said, you know, let's not do the really, really ridiculous things that obviously wouldn't work.
Yeah,
in an RPG.
What was your obvious example that pissed everyone off? Because we totally thought of
by everyone stuff. We mean you.
Yes, and Chris. And
I was with him,
and Pat was there with us in spirit if he wasn't asleep.
Huh? What?
Yeah.
Oh,
right. So what I threw out is I said, let's not use the obvious things that would never work as an RPG, like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood would totally work.
It would. It would totally work.
Yeah. What's it? It's not I'm the listening. Puppet Kingdom. It's the
it's a neighborhood of make believe.
Neighborhood of make believe would totally work. You could do it as like a fun game too, where you just couldn't walk down the street. You play puppets, but occasionally a giant human walks through the puppet land, and you couldn't actually like cross the street. You could only go to the right or to the left. And then if you want to
see,
go somewhere,
you're starting
to
sound like
down.
A board game. Like you have a puppet who has limited movements and there's a human arm and like you cannot go beyond his ability to reach your ass or something.
Hey, have you read D&D? I mean, to me, that is a board game, but like boring.
All right.
Game.
No. Come on. You got to defend this a little better than this. We're
plot-wise, story-wise and stuff. I mean, you have a kingdom,
right.
You have a society,
right.
You have people who have jobs who do things within this. You have a weird mechanic on how they move and how they interact.
You have characters who have magical abilities. Lady Lane Fairchild.
What's the narrative though?
In the neighborhood of make-believe, there was always something going on. And that was the reason why they went there in the first place, because there were things going on, whether it was Prince Tuesday's birthday or if it was King Friday was doing something with
Queen
Sarah.
You're going to write a Prince Tuesday whatever birthday module?
Well, absolutely. Why not? Because what you turn into... Okay, let's say we're going to have Prince Tuesday's birthday. Your adventure, if you're playing X the Owl, suddenly you've got to now find the right gift to get him. Or if you could be... Wasn't Yukon Cornelius? No, it was Cornflake especially. He made furniture. Okay, that little guy made furniture. Well,
he made
now you've got to go to one of the forests and find the right kind of wood or the special kind of wood to make Prince Tuesday's rocking chair.
And here's how you add excitement to any role-play game.
Well, can I set the caveat you're not drunk as fuck while playing the game?
Cthulhu comes to town.
You can
turn it dark and weird. Maybe Prince Tuesday, maybe it isn't his birthday. Maybe he's killed the king.
What was the female's name? The brunette, the young one.
The actual human.
Yeah, the hot one.
She was Lady Aberlin.
Lady Aberlin, Lady, you know, you come to find out that Lady Aberlin's actually in secret a dominatrix.
Right.
Okay, so wait a minute. I'm going to add a new parameter to this game.
Pat rule?
No, the Pat and Chad rule. You have to stay consistent to the universe. You cannot add Cthulhu and dominatrixes to...
What you could add, this would be very... true to the Mr. Rogers thing. Okay, you've got Daniel the Lion, who we all know is a little bit cowardly. Okay, so he's very shy. He's easily frightened. So suddenly, something is scaring Daniel the Lion. So now everybody's got to go and try and find out what's scaring him. And granted, you're not going to get into combat with whatever it is, but odds are it's probably going to be some monstrous type creature, maybe a troll-like creature, who's just a little misunderstood, and you've got to bring him out and convince him that everything's okay.
Maybe this is a role-playing game for little kids.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, maybe this is something that you'd play with a six-year-old.
It is. It's a good jumping-off point, because it's funny. I actually just rediscovered Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood because I have a two-year-old, and he loves the show, and I loved it growing up, and I have a great respect for the show myself.
I have a great respect
and,
for
so we've been watching
Fred
it again. So
he was a great man.
You know, it could be a good one, like you said, for kids, because it's going to be something that they know, and it's like, hey, what better way to introduce a kid to a role-playing game than something he's familiar with? He gets that. He can relate to it and say, oh, we can play a game with this. There you go. Right. So we've proved you wrong, Dan.
Are you guys going to have something that's similar or retarded to say if I bring up Lamb Chop?
No, Lamb Chop needs to die.
I don't think I ever really watched Lamb Chop as a kid.
I like Lamb Chop because I also like the other ones, the donkey and the dog, although I can't remember their names.
All right, I'm going to give one more.
Lamb Chop really is just puppets with funny voices. At least with Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, there is a story. Yeah. I mean, it's a very light framework of a story. But
you're absolutely right, because really Lamb Chop was just more skits, and Mr. Rogers was always there was always a plot in the show. Even if it was in the human side of things, there was still a plot going on.
Those plot lines in the land of make-believe, they go on over many, many shows. I know because, really? Again, we've been watching them.
Uh-huh.
There is a story arc that went on at least 5 or 6 episodes, and that's, they would keep coming back to it. I'm like, good Lord, this is long. I don't remember that. It was like,
sure,
it's like you'd watch one, then you'd watch another one. Like 5 episodes later, they're still talking about the same dilemma that they've got going on.
You know, a show along those lines that would also work pretty well, but it'd be really creepy, because every time I rewatch the show, it's even creepier than I remember.
Anything from Sid and Marty Krofft.
Letter People.
Letter People, I think, was a local show.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it was local.
That's not ringing a bell to me.
Okay, then I'm
because you lived in Springfield, Missouri at the time.
I was not aware it was a local show.
Yeah, not even Missouri. This is St. Louis.
Oh, huh. All right. I'm going to have to look.
It's like DB's Delight.
I don't know if I'll succeed. I'm going to see if I can dig up some Letter People clips to put on the show notes so you guys have some idea what it is
I'm talking
about.
Basically, think of people that are letters.
Imagine if the alphabet could give you nightmares.
How the only way you could tell that they were people is that they had eyes and huge mouths. Huge baby devouring mouths. They were creepy puppets.
This was a cartoon?
Yeah. Oh,
it was a puppet show.
Yeah.
Okay, so all right.
Yeah, wow. And some of the puppets were angry.
Let me just
really weird. Yeah, like
we have C, angry letters.
Well, C and K got all pissed off at each other because they made the same sound and they had big chompy teeth. Oh, it's creepy as all hell.
All right. So I'm going to throw out something else I don't think would make a good role.
Now, is this
game.
A child's one again?
No, this is not a child's one. Throw out something else that I don't think would make a good role playing game. Medical dramas, because you could play it as a role playing game if and only if you had extremely deep characters and focused purely on the human drama, because the emotion, the excitement of, oh my gosh, we have yet another code blue. Where's the crash cart?
It's lupus.
It's always lupus, or it's never lupus, depending on the show, is not going to last as a role-playing game. The fundamental problem that I see here is the fact that the plot of every episode of every medical show is basically the same if you remove the human drama.
I would have to agree with you. And I think also that what would compound that is part of what makes medical dramas great is the fact that they get into that medical techno babble, if you will.
Which most of us aren't qualified to do.
Yeah. Hell no. Hell no. And to try and replicate that on either, you know, some sort of weekly gaming session, you know, beyond just your medical skill check, to get into that detail, you'd never be able to do it.
I hear what you guys are saying, and I don't disagree. But I see one aspect of it that does sound interesting. You have a dice mechanic, you have a system,
right?
And there's no combat involved in it. There's no shooting or punching or kicking or magic or anything like that. But the dice mechanic of the game is surgery.
The sheer willpower to bring this man back. One dice, you put the paddles on. Two dice, you start screaming. Three dice, you jump on his chest.
See, no, I mean,
four dice, you start...
But, I mean, no, you could make
five
an interesting
dice might be
comment.
An Oscar. You know, actually, that would make an interesting metagame, though. This is really more an idea for a board game than a role-playing game, is if you had a show like that, like the dice mechanic I was just making a joke about.
Right.
And what you're actually trying to do is play some kind of a game of economy for ratings.
Mm.
Where you throw down a situation card, and based on the number of dice you blow on it, you can get rating points.
There's a role-playing game for you. Not sitcom, but TV show.
Right.
Basically, that's the role-playing game, is that a couple of people play the actors, a couple of people play the director and the producer and that, and the game master plays the writer, and he comes at you, not hands you a script, but he's like, because you improv all the acting, and then... Yeah, and you roll dice for ratings, and you act scenes out. But the thing is, the interesting stuff takes place behind the scenes. Like, maybe one character is starting to get written out of the show and what they can do to interact, and then Cthulhu shows up. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it sounds pretty lame to
me. And, you know, the way to really make this, I got two words for you. Candy stripers.
I'm going to put somebody else on the spanking block. What do you guys give me one?
That wouldn't work?
Book, novel, genre, comic book, I don't care what
I'll give you guys one.
Okay.
Not only has it been done before, but I know that you guys don't like that sort of stuff. Anime. Even though there is anime role-playing, like Bizum and stuff.
I would think that, yeah, anime could make good role-playing. I think
now,
we'd have to get down
to the
story.
We're not talking a specific one. We're not talking Cowboy Bebop, the role-playing game, or Akira, the role-playing game.
You're just saying in general.
Anime.
Okay.
Where you don't have a specific show you're playing the anime genre.
If we take the anime genre.
Which is huge.
That's like saying novels.
Right, right.
But if we take for a moment what I presume you're getting at, which is the stereotypical anime, sure. Like...
Everybody plays high school students, everybody has a giant robot, two of you use magical powers.
Yeah, and I think the main reason it would be...
You're on tentacles.
Rock on.
The main reason it would be difficult to work in a traditional role-playing game is because of the complete incongruity of reality.
Right.
At one moment, you can accomplish the most absurd things, survive the most ridiculous odds, flap your arms and fly away, and the next moment, somebody with a pocket knife slips and ends your life.
Right. And that's what's cool about watching anime, but it's inherently unfair in playing
it. You know, dice mechanic game, yes. I think if you had a storyteller game, or you had a game that was very strictly based on a bidding system or something like that, a trait system, I think you could make it work. But I will agree with you that if we were to look at a typical RPG,
I don't think
you could fit it into the rules.
I think you would seriously have to pick a genre within anime. You couldn't just do anime. Okay, are we going to play some Yu-Gi-Oh! Card Captor type, gotta catch them all type game? Are we going to play big robots? Are we going to play a period piece?
There's one. The merchandise game.
Merch.
Like Pokemon or Yu-Gi-Oh! Or Bakuman.
A game that's fundamentally a Monty Hall game.
Yeah.
Except you take away even the few things that tend to make a Monty Hall game good. There is nothing going on here, but you go from place to place trying to get something new. With no plot.
If you have a group of girls, you can play Sakura Card Captor. I mean, that game is...
Is that the one where they throw up a card, then strike it with a little staff?
Yeah, they strike
whatever.
It as hard as they can, but instantly stops with no reverberation, because it's all magic.
Right.
And it's a magical girl anime. I don't know the full plot of it. Dawn's watched... I've watched one or two seasons. I'm familiar with it. You know, they have these cloud cards, and basically it's cards become monsters, monsters fight, magical girl stuff, and...
All right.
It supposedly it has a huge fan following, and a lot of girls and a lot of women who watch it absolutely love it. I am the totally wrong target demographic for it, but
apparently
there is a lot of story behind it. That's why they like it so much, is that there's really good characterizations and that there's a lot of story. And I think that you could do a game like that, Dan's merchandising game. You could even buy the cards.
I guess pass them
out.
All right,
again, we're the wrong demographic,
Chris.
I'm going to say One Day at a Time, the role playing game from the old sitcom. Basically, pick a late 70s, early 80s sitcom. So maybe Silver Spoons, Alice,
Family Ties.
I was almost going to say Happy Days, but then there's a lot that goes on in Happy Days that you probably could get away with an RPG.
Well, that was going to be my question. Is obviously it's going to be different from show to show, but if we take older classic sitcoms as a category and paint with a very broad brush, you have a 30-minute show about a family or some group of people that are together for whatever reason. You've got some kind of a problem. I mean, granted, it's rather episodic.
Well, basically,
I guess
the game master is you put them in a situation, you make it funny.
Well, that was going to be my question for Chris, is why do you think this wouldn't work?
When I was trying to think of something to stump you, I was looking at it from, and I was going with the sitcom genre and looking at it from the angle of trying to be funny. And I think that while you would have some success doing that for a little bit, I think it would get really old really quick. And that essentially your role-playing game in that sense would jump the shark very quickly, because suddenly it would just become your attempts to be funny would just begin to fall flat.
Well,
why it would be bad
is because those kinds of sitcoms are about normal people doing normal things that you can relate to, and it's funny because it's true.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so what is the role-playing game in that? You play normal people doing normal things, working normal jobs. I mean, is that why we play role playing games? That's
yeah. I think the half hour sitcom is in its own genre. I mean, because they're all like you said, you can pretty much say that all half hour sitcoms are in that vein. They're
like
that
play
kind of
Family Ties.
You're really talking more
someone
about
someone plays the mom, someone plays the dad, someone plays the kid, someone plays the neighbor.
I think as far as a role playing game, you're really getting more into the hour dramas. You're going to have more meat to the plot. Mm-hmm. It's going to go beyond, say, just the house. Like, you know, most of the sitcoms, they revolve around a house or an apartment or whatever.
You could take any of these genres that we've talked about and you can make them a viable role playing game if you do comedy games.
Yeah.
I mean, like in Fear of the Con, they had Scooby do the role playing game.
That's true.
And they added comedy into it, and they added Cthulhu into it. And, you know, it was great. Everybody had fun.
You know what's interesting about this conversation so far? Every single idea we've thrown out, we may have had some pretty heavy caveats in that maybe they don't make good ongoing role playing games. Maybe they have to be comedy. Maybe there's this limitation, that limitation. You have to play it from a certain angle or as a certain person. But do you realize we have found some way to make absolutely everything we've pitched here work
thus far?
I think that we can make some of these things we've pitched are workable, but it's nothing I'd ever want to play.
No. Well, I mean, certainly it's much easier to have a Dune role-playing game than a Star Search role-playing game. But it seems like...
Yeah, there's one for you.
Yeah, variety show.
American Idol.
If you play somebody who's behind the scenes or whatever and dealing with intrigue and drama in the background, then...
My example is going to be reality television shows, like your Survivor or stuff like that. I mean, would that make... Could you even do something like that?
Honestly, I think that type of thing, at least particular instance of Survivor, you could do that very easily because there's a lot of athleticism that goes on there. There's certain amounts of strategery that happens as well.
Yeah, a lot
Chris,
of baking.
But Chris, what you've got to realize, though, is you're going to lose a player every single week. Your gaming group's going to be gone in a month.
But, you know, that in and of itself would be actually an interesting aspect to explore.
It's like
you know
Stalin
what I mean?
Purge the role-playing game. All right.
Ted, I'm sorry, you just can't come back for 3 months till we're done with this campaign.
But if you want to stop by the next week and just drop off some chips, that'd be just fine.
Bring beer next week, dude.
I want to talk about a completely different animal.
Fantastic. Oh, I see what you did there.
What we want to talk about this show, and I'm going to set some careful parameters on this, because as we were kicking this around before, we definitely found this is a topic that we're going to have frame and compartmentalize correctly to keep it on topic and keep it moving somewhere. But what we want to talk about is games in which you play either animals or anthropomorphic animals. Okay. For anyone who's not familiar with what anthropomorphism means, it means to take on human traits. So for example, if you play a dog, you're playing an animal. If you play a dog man, you are playing an anthro. Now, first off, there's two big ways we're going to cut this. First thing is we are not talking about furries in the sense of the sexual fetish.
So put down the bass groove.
Yeah.
You've heard the furry jokes. We've made them before. That's not what this show is about.
It's totally what this show's
if
about.
You're hot for sports mascot. We're not talking about that group right now.
But this whole show was inspired by a furry. Whose name I looked up and I don't have the email anymore. Yeah. And I'm sorry. You're the dude who wore I want to say it's a dog costume.
It was a tiger costume.
No, I think it was a dog. He didn't specify.
He wore an animal costume and he was
at a fur con and he was wearing a Fear the Boot t-shirt. I have to tell the story. So I'm looking for a Fear the Boot logo. This is for Fear the Con. I was putting together something for it. And I couldn't get a hold of Dan, and Dan has all the artwork for the show and whatnot. And so I just did a Google image search to find our Fear the Boot logo, and I typed in Fear the Boot logo, whatever. And up on the Google image search is a guy in a furry costume, like full head-to-toe suit. You cannot see a single piece of his skin at all, wearing a Fear the Boot t-shirt. And so I'm like, that's a furry wearing an FTB t-shirt. That's so odd. So, of course, I had to email it to Dan and send it out. We were cracking up. And either I think you've posted it on the forums, Dan, and everybody was cracking up and laughing. And it was a good time had by all. But that guy whose name, I'm really sorry, dude, because I don't remember your name and I don't have the email anymore. You know who you are. You sent me an email, and in that email, he sent me that picture and then another one of him reading a Savage Worlds book in the costume. And it was a great costume, by the way, really well done. And he's talking about how in the email, he's like, you know, you guys make fun of a lot of furries. And I tell you what, you're absolutely right. There is a ton of stuff in the community that is worth making fun of. And I should know because obviously I'm a furry. And he's like, you know, I think you guys are great. And hey, thanks for listening, by the way. But could you guys do an episode on furries or anthropomorphism in games right. and such, and animals?
And the first little line we're going to draw, though, is that what we're going to talk about here is things like playing a gnoll or playing a cat girl, not yiffing.
Yeah.
Now, the second way we're going to compartmentalize this
because we've already done the episode on sex.
Right. The second thing that we're going to do to compartmentalize this is we are going to separate animals from anthros.
Yeah.
Okay. If we're talking about an animal, the example Chad gave, and this was a great one.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Was what if somebody made a role-playing game based on Watership Down?
Mm-hmm.
Now, in Watership Down, if you're not familiar with the book, it's about this kind of ongoing life drama of a handful of rabbits, not rabbit people, not rabbit knights. Okay. They're not
They didn't have castles. They didn't walk on two legs. Yeah. In fact, they didn't even speak. It's not so much they had their own bunny language. The book just assumed that they could talk and then the book translated it for
right.
you. So you can have a story that you followed.
Precisely. As opposed to, the second topic we're going to talk about is playing an anthropomorphic creature, mm-hmm. something that shares both human and animal traits. Secret of Nim, the Cadians from the old Star Trek cartoon,
mm-hmm.
the GIF from Spelljammer, for mm-hmm. example, okay, the hippo people. So let's start off with the first one, playing an animal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to tell you straight up, I personally do not think I could play an actual animal as an animal in a role-playing game.
Therefore, you believe no one else can either.
Yes. No.
Because we are Fear the Boot.
If you think about it, the life and desires of most animals, okay, they can dress it up on Discovery Channel and make it look fairly compelling with careful editing. But the truth is, their lives, their thoughts, the things they struggle with, to the best of our understanding,
food, f***ing fighting.
Yeah, it's relatively simple. Mm-hmm. There's not a whole lot going on there. And so for me, if I was playing in a game where everyone is an animal, or not talking about one guy's playing somebody's pet or familiar, we'll get to that as a completely different topic, either late in this show or maybe on a different show. But if we decided, for example, we're going to play a game where we're a wolf pack, I really don't see that lasting more than one or two settings before it's going to get really boring.
I think that you could do, you know, you could have the whole man versus nature thing. Well, in this case, it'd be like wolf versus nature, wolf versus man. I think to keep it ongoing and to keep it interesting, I think that in most role-playing games, the games generally are propelled, maybe they're not about, but they're propelled by the motivations and desires of the characters that change and evolve over time as the characters develop, and or even simply they want more stuff and they want to become more powerful, even if it's simple as that. With your wolf pack, the motivations necessarily of the wolf pack are kind of set in stone. It's the three F's. And I think that you can carry the game on and move that game forward by having the game master continually provide external pressures to them. Man encroaching on their habitat or...
Once again, for a time. Now, what I do think would be interesting mm-hmm. is playing a game where you're playing animals, but you allow them to have either completely or some portion of mm-hmm. a human intellect.
Yes, totally.
And I think it would be interesting for two reasons.
I kind of assume that for the first one, but I see what you're saying for the first one, where if they have animal intellect and it is just that, yeah.
Sticking with that whole animal intellect, I think that would be really difficult to get right mm-hmm. from the human side of things, because your brain is going to be engaged to want to try and do more, and you're not going to be able to. You're constricted by the three F's, basically.
Yeah.
What are the three F's?
Food, fight, and f***.
Okay.
Food, folks, and fun if you're McDonald's.
I guess it could be that.
But here's why I think it would be interesting to play it that way. Because you introduce some degree of human intellect or human society, you can start to tell a story that goes beyond the 3Fs.
Right. So, well, you can add in things like drama or comedy or tragedy or
Same time, you can also introduce qualities of life, desires and concerns that are unique to that animal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For example, humans socially are almost exactly like dogs. I think talking about a wolf pack or a dog pack is probably a bad example. But let's go back to the Watership Down thing. Let's say that you're playing a warren of rabbits. Well, you know what? A warren of rabbits socializes very differently than a group of humans do. If you take geese socialize very differently than a group of humans
Have you ever read Watership Down?
Yes, I've not. It's been a long time.
I couldn't tell you the specifics of it, but that's kind of what it was about. It was about their society and how they socialized and how it was a little different.
The encroachings of man. If you've got a great game master, the fact that they can explain some things to you, and if they're good with it, you get the idea of what's going on, but they intentionally keep it just a little over your head.
Yeah.
Because you're assuming you have some kind of an intellect that goes beyond what a rabbit really does, but you're not a human.
If you were,
you don't come from an industrial society. You don't really understand what a gun is.
If you were a game master and we were playing, we'll just say, because we're using it, the Watership Down, the role-playing game, we're all playing rabbits, and we come upon a bulldozer, would you say, okay, you come upon, it's large and hard and rumbling and smoke belches out from it and it's pushing the earth and it's this huge beast and you're scared of it? Or would you say, you come upon a bulldozer, and maybe describe a bulldozer.
Oh, absolutely, the former.
Yeah, you got to go in a certain sense into the world of the fantastical like that, even if it is still a mundane object. But you've got something that's very sinister looking, especially with those teeth hanging off of the scoop on the front.
And I agree with you guys. You want your players to kind of, after you do the descriptions, like, okay, what do you do now? It's coming right towards you. They're kind of leaning into it. Is this a bulldozer? Not 100% sure.
Yeah,
I don't like it. That's kind of freaky.
Well,
that's what you want your characters to start
precisely,
your players to do.
Or even if the players figure it out pretty quickly, you start off the plot point with they're all in their warren that night, and all of a sudden a bulldozer starts tearing it up. Your players, even if they say, okay, this is a bulldozer, we're at a construction site, what's being built here? How far do we have to go to find something else? A human is yelling something at approaching me. Is this a guy who wants to pet the cute bunny, or am I a pest in his lawn?
Yeah. Or I'm a bunny. Do I even care?
Yeah. Do you even care? And we're using it's rabbits like, oh, here crap. Just because of the Watership Down example. Sure. But
and because they're very much not like humans.
It's also a great opportunity here to learn a little something. Because we talked about it's two or three episodes ago.
I don't want to learn anything. I just want more loot.
If you're just looking for loot, we can go back to the Yu-Gi-Oh! Role-playing game. But
no, I want cloud cards to be pretty.
We talked a couple episodes back about someone that wanted to play cults in a role-playing game. And we said, you know
what?
Oh
my God, a bunny cult? There's something really sinister about that.
Okay, maybe, but that's not where I was going.
Oh.
But what I was going to say is, one of the things that we recommend is, you know what? Hop online. Go to an online encyclopedia, go to your local library and start learning some things about like the ancient mystery cults. Mm-hmm. Use that as a basis for this. Similar thing. If I was going to put down a role-playing game that has alien races in it, and you said, I want to play an alien, and we're going to assume this isn't Star Trek where everyone's a complete archetype or stereotype with a funny forehead and nose, but we assume there's some depth to the aliens. One of the first things you'd want to know is, what are they like? What makes them different from humans? That in this situation, humans would tend to do X, Y, Z, but these guys are going to tend to do A, B, C.
Mm-hmm.
And this gives you a great opportunity to go out to wherever you want to get your information and say, hey, wow, I didn't realize that this animal works like this. And it would be a lot of fun playing an animal where when somebody shows up, you don't respond to them the way a human would. You don't feel them out the way a human would. Making eye contact means something a little different.
Right.
And you don't want to play that up too far because it can quickly become the cheesy one track of the game.
Well, and what happens when you have one player who basically they watched Wolf Week on Discovery Channel and the other three players are like, well, what is it? They're kind of like dogs, right?
Yeah.
don't know. I think there'd be a little bit of a disparity, not in power and ability, but just in interaction. And one person go, no, 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 that's what this means. And
well, I think you can alleviate that problem in your game setup materials. You know, if you have a 1 or 2 page prep sheet for the culture of rabbits, the culture of moles in this guy's backyard, you know, here's kind of how they think. Here's some of their desires. You know, here's some of the plans going on. Here's some of the myths that exist within this culture. That kind of thing. I think that you could really get in and have some fun with that. Because when you think about it, if you're playing a small rodent type creature, especially one that lives, you know, in and around humans, suddenly you're living in a land of giants.
Right.
And you have all kinds of material where you can mine some good myths, some good stories, you know, bring in your prophecies, that kind of thing. And then you can introduce some of those role-playing elements in there where maybe some of these people want to pursue those goals.
Well, you know, going back to our original little game we were playing, I guess here's the $64,000 question. If you added 30 IQ points, could Meerkat Manor make a great RPG?
What, like add 30 IQ points to every
Meerkat on the show? Would that suddenly make a workable RPG?
I don't know what Meerkat Manor is, but...
I do.
Yeah, I have a passing familiarity with it. Yeah. I think you probably could, you know, because they're already portrayed as being, you know, a certain level of culture there, and then... You're adding more intelligence to the whole thing, then suddenly you get into just, you broaden their horizons.
What do you do if you have your players and they don't, because this is kind of a hard concept to wrap your head around anyway, half your players have a different interpretation of how much intelligence their animal should have?
I think you just got to discuss that very carefully up front. Some of this is going to be trial and error. I mean, honestly, this is just not a common type of game.
Right.
The most well-known example I can think of off the top of my head would be that cats role-playing game where you play cats protecting their children from things that go bump in the night.
It's a really, really great book called Plucker by Brom. And it's not animals, it's toys.
But given that, given the fact that this is such a unique idea, or at least an unusual idea, I think there's definitely going to have to be some careful sit downs up front. Mm-hmm. The game master's really going to have to spend a lot of time in the John thinking about this. And there's probably going to be some trial and error.
Because I know you're in our little group. I know that there'd be someone who would want to play the animal with barely enough IQ points to be able to take part in that game, all the way to the other end of somebody who wants to play an animal who is an inventor, who's making devices.
With a completely inhuman.
Well,
the MacGyver mouse.
I saw Farmer Brown shoot another bunny with a shotgun. I found where he keeps it. I found where he keeps it. So Fluffy's going to get underneath the barrel to lift it up, and Hoppy's going to go back to the trigger and yank it with his paw. Why wouldn't this work?
Yeah, why wouldn't we think of that? It's so obvious, and we have the intelligence. And it's like,
so you're
letting Phil sit in on your gaming sessions for this?
Oh, by the way, congratulations to Phil. He's a new father. He had a...
not a new father. He's a second-time father.
He had a little bunny.
A little boy named Keegan. I'm going to tell him, man, it's like he spelled Kurgan wrong.
There can be only two, apparently, in his family.
All right, let's move on to the second compartment of this discussion, which is anthropomorphized animals. Animals that have some degree of human characteristics. Now, this could either be something like Nim, where, and by the way, the book's a whole lot better than the movie, but this could be something like Nim, where they are animals. They're not humans, okay? They don't have opposable thumbs, things like that. But maybe they
stand up on their hind legs.
Yeah, maybe they kind of stand up on their hind legs.
You're talking like Wind in the Willows type thing.
Yes, they have complete human intelligence.
Right.
They're capable of industry. They're capable of reason.
If you go to the Wind in the Willows example, which is very far removed from the Nim example, but still within that same framework, on one hand, you have... They take a scrap of cloth and they tie it around them, and it's a cloak kind of clothes, and they have a pin and they're using that as a sword. Whereas on the Wind in the Willow example, they have a car, like a little car they drive around, and they live in houses.
And the toad becomes obsessed with that car, if I remember the story right.
In a certain sense, you're actually getting back to our banter topic in the whole Mr. Rogers example, because there was plenty of animals that lived in the neighborhood of make-believe that had completely human intelligence characteristics.
Well, and also many many of your Disney movies or
right.
Like the DreamWorks movies as right. well are good examples of
yeah. Ratatouille, you know, a rat yeah, cooks
ants,
and
bugs,
Puss in Boots from Shrek.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The second type
although of, Bugs is Seven Samurai.
The other type of anthropomorphic animal are those that have physically human characteristics. They walk on two legs, they have opposable thumbs, they can mm-hmm. speak, and I think for the...
Are you talking about a 6 foot tall dog man?
Yeah, I'm talking okay. about gnolls. I'm talking about, I suppose, something like a Wemyc, maybe, or a mm-hmm. centaur might even fall in this category. I realize it's not quite the same thing.
Bad examples of this to me are when you see like comics or something done like this, or even books and sci-fi, Justifiers, this game we usually talk about is like this, where you have a human body and an animal head. Please don't do that. It's so silly.
Yeah,
I mean, you're basically playing a human with an animal head mask.
What I want to do, though, is on this side of the conversation, I'm going to lump those two groups together mm-hmm. for one reason. Now, I realize that in terms of role-playing, there's a huge difference in terms of what you can do in the game if you're a dog with a human brain versus being a dog man. But the one thing they have in common is the fact that they can, at least mentally, interact with the game as if they were human.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so for that reason alone, and just to keep this conversation focused, I'm going to lump these two types of animals together. So Nim and Noel are the same thing, okay, just for the purpose of this conversation. One of the great things I think this allows is for those that are visually oriented, this allows you to play something that looks kind of distinct,
mm-hmm.
looks kind of neat, and even if you're not real visually oriented, and this is one I want to take apart in detail, but let me at least set it up, is this gives you some obvious ways to spin your personality.
Right.
Okay? For example, if you're playing the cat guy, maybe you're a little more graceful, you're a little more prissy. Chad and I, back when we played that Justifiers game, had
which is a truly awful game that we had a lot of fun
playing.
Yes.
And I played a Komodo dragon guy,
uh-huh.
and Chad played a gazelle guy.
That's right. I was a scientist, and I had a T-shirt that said "Prey."
And my training and my role,
because he was Prey. Pat's laughing at me.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
My training and my role in the game was that I'm supposed to be a functioning member of this team. I'm not allowed to eat my teammates.
That's right.
But guess what? I had this animal impulse where every time I looked at Chad,
mm-hmm.
particularly if we were out in the field and rations were running
delicious.
A little low, he looked delicious. Or it could just be I'm looking at over at him to see if he's okay, and suddenly Chad's instincts kick in.
Teeth, scales. Death,
yeah,
run.
Something very bad's about to happen here. And it led to some great RP, mm-hmm. both between us and even apart from us. Because, for example, Chad, I remember the way that you played your character was that he kind of started to take on this almost gallows view of life. He's kind of accepted he's going to die because
mm-hmm.
that's his lot in life.
Yeah. And that's so, his entire purpose is to feed other animal.
And so that,
but not anymore because he's a scientist,
right? But that
but
one part of his character never got shaken out,
yeah.
and so he was still very focused on speed. He didn't mess with stuff like armor.
Mm-hmm.
Now the great thing there is it gives you a lot of opportunities to really have some fun. If you're willing to do some reading on the animal, you can learn about some really neat habits they have in terms of what they eat, in terms of how they behave, how they socialize. For example, if you've got a dog and a cat in your house, it's always interesting watching them socialize, give them human intelligence, but the same impulses, and think about what might happen. The downside to this that I see is the exact same downside that I see to, quite frankly, playing something like an elf. Within humans, there are many archetypes and stereotypes. Within elves, that's the archetype and stereotype. I'm aloof. I like the woods. I'm really good with a bow. That's my character.
I'm a dwarf. I'm drunk. I'm Scottish.
I'm afraid of horses.
Yeah.
That's my character.
Think dangerous in open spaces.
Yeah. Dangerous in the
short distances.
Or the short distances.
Short distances.
Yeah. And what do your gazelle eyes see? And I think certainly there is a danger that you could allow that animal to to become an excuse for not developing a character.
But you know what? I think you can say that about anything. I'm playing a fighter. That's my character. I fight. I'm an arena fighter. Yeah. No, I'm a gladiator. That's my character. It's all what you put into it. I would be horribly remiss, and I think people would just, or some people out there are just slathering right now, just going, oh my God, they're not mentioning it. We have to mention Mouse Guard. I don't know if it's a new guy. See, I've never played it. I've seen some things and I've read some things about it, and it looks really cool. But basically, yeah, you play a mouse. You have armor or swords. They have industry, they have society and stuff. But I can't really do it justice. I think there's a whole overarching plot. I'm unfamiliar with it. I would, if somebody wants to send me a free sample of Mouse Guard, I'd be glad to read it. But the artwork I've seen looks great, and people really get excited about it when they talk about it. But it is exactly what we're talking about here, and it's really cool.
Another great place to go for some general inspiration, though, in my mind, I don't think he goes quite far enough, is C.S. Lewis Chronicles of Narnia.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he goes quite far enough in distinguishing the animals from humans apart from appearance.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, there's some really neat stuff in there that you can draw from for ideas.
Fables is another good one. The comic book series has great animals as having personalities and motivations. Fables is a fantastic comic book series anyway. They have a lot of animal characters in there as well.
Simple game mechanic thing you're going to have to consider on this is balance. Not all things are created equal. If you're telling me that you're going to play a mouse person and I tell you that I'm going to play a pterodactyl man.
Hey, look at our Justifiers game, man. I threw balance out the window. I didn't care. You were playing a Komodo dragon, dude. Your bite is poisonous and you've got scales and you're strong and you're huge and you're freaking Komodo dragon man. What am I? I'm a gazelle. Well, oh, I've got two big horns I'm always too afraid to use.
Well, we also at least gave you some speed modifiers and such. But
But it was great because it was so in character. I mean, yeah, you totally could eat me anytime you wanted to. The only thing that stopped you is I had a pistol. And again, I was too afraid to use it. So. Fear was a big motivator of this character. It was really fun to play. So have any, like Dan and I have talked about the gazelle and the Komodo dragon. I don't even remember what that character is called anymore. It's so long ago, but
yeah, I don't remember.
Anyway,
either.
Have any of you guys ever played a animalistic character like this?
I never really have, or if I did, I never played it that was anything that lasted too long. And I don't know, maybe this is a bit, I guess, speciest would be the right word. I don't know. But I have a hard time understanding the appeal. I can see some of the hook fun that you have with the whole Komodo dragon gazelle thing, but I don't know. It's just for me, it doesn't hold a lot of appeal.
Why? Can you try to explain that in a little more detail?
Why are you so wrong, Chris? Tell us.
Why is Chris wrong? Chris is wrong because he just doesn't get it in that sense. I'll play dwarves, I'll play humans. I think it comes from the sense that as going from a player standpoint, I would have a hard time identifying with doing something like that.
Is it that humans, dwarves, elves, that sort of thing, humanoids have great adventure moments and they have great dramatic moments and they have fun moments, but when you see an animal, you see the three Fs?
Maybe that's part of it. I don't know. I mean, I know... I think probably the deepest exploration I went and did in something like this was in a campaign I ran. I had gnolls as being a horribly misunderstood race. They were regarded in the human side world as being nothing but savage animals, and for a certain part, that was true. But when they encountered some, they suddenly realized, oh, wait a second, these guys actually have some semblance of culture. They have some semblance of, you know, worthiness, I guess, in being a species that's not just considered a beast. But from a player standpoint, I've never really looked into that. And I don't know, maybe that's a limitation on my own part. It's never been something that held a huge amount of appeal for me.
I actually have not played an animal character either. And I was actually even thinking a little bit more, because I was trying to think of any example. And I guess I sort of had the same thing that Chris is saying. And it's sort of, I guess, maybe speciesist or humanoid-ist. Mm-hmm. And the fact that even like, say, in Star Wars, I've played a number of Star Wars games, and this is a little bit different, but
right. You've
got alien races, which are sort of animalistic humanoids. A lot of them are, I really kind of think of. And even in that genre, I always played a human.
Right.
I think it's probably, probably for the abilities wise, but I wouldn't even branch out and play like a pterodactyl type alien or a reptilian type alien. I played humans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, you're pro home team. You know, I got no problem with that.
And I think it's because
I'm a human. I like humans.
I think it was because I couldn't relate to it. And it was, that sort of a thing.
Do you think it would be something that you two would ever branch out? Like, you would actually give this a try? Or is this something that just, no, totally not interested in
this? I would give it a try. I, like I said, I think it would be a matter of playing like a game like The Justifiers or something along those lines.
I've seen you break out of your mold in a role-playing game, Pat.
Yeah.
Like, from where you usually sit. And you really seem to have a lot of fun when you try new stuff.
Yeah, I would definitely be a doer. I would definitely do it. I just haven't done it in the past. This is all.
What about you, Chris? You're old and crotchety and set in your ways.
I have a more specific question for Chris.
Is,
Chris, what you said kind of struck me as interesting because you talked about how you could really develop a gnoll, a dog man or a jackal man or a hyena man or whatever exactly it is they're supposed to be. But you talked about how you could develop a gnoll as an NPC race. And you could add depth to them and culture to them. And quite frankly, you went through the process of, in my mind, what it would take to make a good gnoll PC. What is it that keeps you from making that jump from playing one as a PC?
You know, I don't know. It's just, I think it's because on the GM side of the screen, I can develop them like that and use them, but I don't have to stick with them. They're only a small part of the plot because eventually the characters are going to find and interact with other people or other races or whatever, and I'll jump into that role. But if I'm a player on that one side, I think in a certain sense I'd feel stuck or pigeonholed into, I have this dog man. I've got to stick with this dog man. This is my guy from now until this campaign's done or unless I die. So,
but just help me understand, what would make that different from being stuck with the elf man or the dwarf man?
And I think this is where we get into the speciesist part of it, is the fact that if for some reason, because they quote-unquote look human, I could identify with an elf or a dwarf or whatever. I don't know, and maybe it's just clinging to those certain stereotypes. See, now, I could get into an animal thing like the Justifier thing that you guys talked about, but I think it would require a real buy-in from everybody else at the table. I think if everybody else was playing animal characters like that, then I could do it. Or if the game was run really well, I could do it. But, you know, if there's weakness on either the player's side or the GM side, I think that I would eventually get bored and it would just kind of fall apart.
I have found personally that it is easier for me to play an animal man than it is to play a typical metahuman like an elf. And here's why. My problem, as I've said before in this episode and in the past, is I think that for character creation and cultural descriptions, people tend to simplify down most races too far. They take one social stereotype and that becomes the guiding principle of the entire race. Simply put, a Komodo dragon is better developed than most fictional races. And I don't say this to insult fiction writers.
Insult fictional races. You fictional races.
No. I said fictional writers, not races. Uh-huh. Or fiction writers, not fictional writers.
But you have fictional friends.
I say this rather to play up the wonder and diversity of nature. To say that, you know, I can go and look at these different creatures and find things that are genuinely unique, genuinely unusual.
Well, you know what you can do too? Like, we'll use the Komodo dragon as an example. You can find myth and legend about Komodo dragons. My God, foxes? You mean myths and legends in Japan alone I can find on foxes? And they're great.
Well, and this is going to sound...
Tanookies?
This is going to sound a little harsh, but to be completely, brutally honest...
And fictionally racist.
And fictionally racist. I've got three dogs, as you guys know.
Yes.
I have seen a greater diversity of personality between those three dogs than I have any three elves in most D&D games.
I could see that.
What are you talking about, dude? You have the wood elves, you have underground elves, you have desert elves and swamp elves. They're all different. A rich variety of pointy-haired humans. I mean, elves.
I think maybe for me, maybe the opportunity really never has come around very often. You know, for the variety of games we played, there just really wasn't that
option,
you know, that opportunity. There really wasn't that option. We never really sat down and played Traveler.
Yeah.
So I could play Catman. I could play my Wolfman. It just didn't really exist.
I do understand where you're coming from, though, Chris, because as someone who has the hobby, of writing homebrew RPGs. I've written sci-fi RPGs and sat down with people, and I've had certain players say, well, I want to play a human. And these are normally people that like to branch out into other things. And I'm like, why? And the response is, well, because quite frankly, some of the other things you've written are so non-human or so bizarre. Yeah. I can't relate to them.
That's a problem in your Danverse game. I mean, I think it's a good problem to have as a writer. Like when you present here, you can play this, 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 and humans, and you're looking at it, it's like, I cannot wrap my head around this alien because it's alien. You know, because you say it thinks like this, but it doesn't think like this. And it's not that you can't do this. It just doesn't think like that. And but it's not pigeonholed into a society. And it's like, I don't.
Right.
You know, this doesn't compute.
And I don't say that to toot my own horn, but but simply to say that I understand, Chris, where you're coming from. That I guess if you can be presented with something that really is just outside of your norm of storytelling or character imagination or your normal experience, that, yeah, maybe it just does get too weird.
So let me ask you this. You guys might be willing to play animals, but would you be willing to LARP animals?
Let's ask the other question. Would you be willing to love a cat girl?
Oh,
meow, baby. Meow. I think the only reason you want to play a Weemic is because you want to cuddle.
Probably. I'd have a better chance with Annapoona and Unipoona, so. Anyway, thanks about as far as I want to go with that topic. So thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
Meow.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2009. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.